Everybody out there in Podland, this is Pamela Rice again, and this is the Hard News Vegan. Hard News Vegan. I am the author, as most people know out there, of 101 Reasons Why I'm a Vegetarian. Both pamphlet form, about 200,000 of those guys out in circulation, and in book form. Thank you, Lantern Books. In the background, you'll hear my theme song by Kathy Reynolds, Gothic Prelude. This is my second podcast, people. Still getting my sea legs on, so to speak, here. As I mentioned last time, I was trying to let folks know what they were in for with this particular podcast. And I mentioned that I want it to be more or less a sequel to my magazine that I used to publish. I published about 50 issues of the Viva Vine, the vegetarian issues magazine, and I haven't really published a magazine in, it's going on 5 years now, but it's what I love to do. It was my first love all the way, publishing a magazine, but it is an enormous amount of work. Enormous, and I would do it in a minute if someone wanted to support it financially, but in the meantime, it's going to be podcasting. And in the Viva Vine, there was always a section in there called Vegetarian News, and this was my favorite subject because I looked at the mainstream media and I saw news stories. And they were never, there were lots of very interesting stories to vegans, but in particular, but they were never 100% certainly from the vegan standpoint. So that's what the Viva Vine was for, to take regular news and to veganize it, so to speak, reconstitute it into a vegan story from a vegan standpoint, okay? And all of these things, these are hardcore political issues usually that I would gravitate to. These are the kind of things I like, that interest me. I'm not really into food lifestyle. I'm not a foodie. I'm not into nutrition and all the little, the different kind of lifestyle aspects of veganism. I'm into the political, all right. I know that, not very many people are really into the political aspect of veganism. I can attest to that, boy. I have a meetup group, meetup.com, meetup.com, meetup.com. I have a meetup group in New York City called Vegan Scholars and Writers Roundtable, and I just basically can't get anybody to come to any of the meetup groups. It's costing me, $144 a year to have that meetup group. Well, I don't know how long I'm going to keep that, considering nobody comes to the events, or very few people, and often just the same old people. Anyway, I was hoping, that this would be a great opportunity to find other vegans who are into political issues, but there are none. I think people, when they see me coming, they run, because they really don't want to hear about it. Now, that is a problem for me, I'm just a pariah out there. I am astute in a subject matter that no one wants to know or hear about. Unfortunately, if we keep hiding our head in the sand out there for too long, a lot of my prophecies, they aren't prophecies, I'm just relating information from scientists usually, are going to come true. And it's not going to be a pretty world, if these meat eaters, they keep getting the upper hand. Another reason why vegans don't really like me, I think, is because more and more I'm talking about how I'm going to become more public with this point of view, that I really think that vegans have blood on their hands, in a way. I mean, certainly we're not opening up the factory farms. We're not the ones that are perpetrating all the horror of factory farming and all the horror of animal agriculture wherever and however it is done, and meat eating and slaughtering and all of that, and all the environmental and the health catastrophe of meat, you know. We don't have a direct, certainly, responsibility there. However, we are basically pretty well informed, but we are really truly hiding our head in the sand. And over the last 17 years that I've been a vegan, there have been enormous changes. Factory farming has basically gotten bigger and more widespread, and it is becoming more and more the norm. It basically is the norm, you know. I mean, I don't want to get into the statistics right now. And I believe that vegans are the chosen people. We are today's chosen people. I mean, back, 6,000 years ago, the Jews might have been the chosen people to God Almighty. But today, we vegetarians are we vegans are the chosen people. And I would like that little idea to take root out there in the vegan world. So if we are not doing anything to counter the trend toward factory farming and toward the expanse of animal agriculture all over the world, and animal agriculture is scheduled to basically the amount of meat produced is going to double by mid-century. I mean, this is unfathomable. I can't even imagine this, you know, from every standpoint you can imagine: health, environment, you know, horrors of and cruelty. So if we vegans are not doing anything about it, the blood is on our hands too. I hate to say that. And because meat eaters just will not go up against their interests. Their interest is to have lots and lots of meat, you know. You know, just listen to them, you know, talking and, you know, slobbering all over themselves and talking about a friggin' hot dog or something. Okay, you know, they're not going to go up against their addictions, the meat eaters. And they're certainly not going to champion the issues that need to be championed. That is, for instance, talking about eating lower on the food chain to counter the trend toward global warming. Okay, meat eaters just are not going to go for that issue, you know. But of course, if they don't, and if people don't start talking about eating lower in the food chain to counter a global warming, then everything you say about global warming is just empty rhetoric. That's the truth. Okay, of course, you know, meat eaters hate me. I get, I come on strong. You know, those meat eaters are, you know, good at throwing the epithets my way. You know, they hurl these things. They call me the smugitarian. I'm on my high horse and all that stuff. You know, they're very good at saying these things, and they get vociferous about it. So, you know, I just get totally vociferous right back at them. I don't know. You know, that's just the way I am. Everybody says, "Oh, Pam, you know, just cool it. Would you please cool it? You know, just don't talk, you know. Don't just eat that milkshake and shut up, you know." I says, "All right." I don't think so. But anyway, you know, all these meat eaters, they just want us vegans to go away. We bother meat eaters a lot, you know. And but we're not going to go away, and I'm not going to go away, because I just love this planet Earth too much, and I think that it needs somebody to stick up for it. I love animals. They don't deserve all the horrors that they go through, okay? I'm going to stick up for them. I'm really getting into Gary Francione lately. You know, he's really hardcore. He doesn't cut anybody any slack, you know. I like that. And I'm not going to cut anybody any slack. You know, I'm not going to make the world safer for meat eaters in some way or another. I'm not going to ease their conscience. You know, I want to keep burdening their conscience with the facts. And it's not hard, you know, to do that. There's just so many reasons not to eat meat. You know, it's ridiculous. But Gary, he tells it like it is. And so do I. And I'm going to be linking to some of his web pages, some of his podcasts from the website, vivaveggie.org. Vivaveggie.org. That's with one G, okay? Go there, and then you go to the podcast, click on that button, and then I'll have stuff from Gary Francione, some great podcasts and essays that I've been reading lately. He's great. I want to talk today about foot and mouth disease. It seems to be rearing its head over in England again. They found two farms so far. So I've heard, I didn't read the paper this morning, but two farms now had outbreaks, little bitty outbreaks of foot and mouth disease. But you want to strike terror in the souls of men? You know, talk about foot and mouth disease to an English farmer. He will shudder. He will, you know, he'll run down the hall screaming, you know, if you mention foot and mouth disease, okay? Foot and mouth disease is a wildly contagious disease that attacks hooved animals. That means cattle, pigs, sheep, for instance. And in 2001, there was this insane outbreak. I mean, I don't know, Americans didn't really notice. We don't notice anything. I don't think Americans notice much. You know, people in England, they knew what was going on. It was on their newscasts. There were piles of cows being incinerated on the evening news at night after night. We saw it maybe a little bit, but, you know, it really wasn't in our face at all over here in the States. 6 million cows, pigs, and goats, was it goats? Sheep, rather, were destroyed. They used the word destroyed. They were shot in the head, okay, piled up, and then lit on fire, okay, incinerated. And from those pyres, you know, you've got dioxin. That was a real problem that emanated from all those animals. When you incinerate animals, it's a byproduct. It's a poison. It gets into the air. So foot and mouth disease, you know, this is one of the biggest vindications for the vegetarian lifestyle you can imagine. And it's, there are so many vindications out there for the veggie diet. But this one's a biggie. I mean, when you're exterminating 6 million large animals, these aren't little animals like chickens. Not that that's any better. But you're talking about a lot of biomass here, animal bodies that you have to do something with when you exterminate animals like this. Foot and mouth disease, by the way, is just a bad cold that animals get. It's a very bad cold. Okay, they get blisters all over their body and But the main thing that happens to an animal is its productivity wanes. That is, if they're an animal that you know, you eat its flesh, its growth will slow, and this is not allowed, you know, in the meat industry. Okay, and if you, in dairy animals, the milk production will wane. So the animals are just not productive, and when you're a farmed animal, your life depends on your productivity. You've got to produce at a certain level or it's off to the abattoir. Abattoir is a fancy name for slaughterhouse. They use it over in England, so I thought I'd use that name. Okay, in the third world, by the way, hoof and mouth disease is endemic. You know, the developed world, the rich nations like England, you know, they're very, very picky about this hoof and mouth disease to not take hold. And if it takes hold, you have to eradicate it ruthlessly. I mean, there were only about 2,000 animals that actually had hoof and mouth disease in England in year 2001, but they killed 6 million animals. I mean, okay, I feel like saying that again, but I'm not going to. You can You can go back and rehear that. It's insane. And the most of those animals were perfectly healthy. They did not contract this, but once one animal in a herd gets this disease, you have to kill the whole herd, and you have to kill herds that are within a 6-mile radius at least. So, you know, if it spreads to any large, you know, significant geographic area, you're killing off a lot of animals, as they were. 6 million animals, large animals, were killed. And, you know, it was a horror. I mean, the countryside smelled. A lot of rare breeds became extinct because of that epidemic. And the whole reason was to hold up the export trade. The export trade was worth more than the cull of 6 million animals. The export trade was more valuable to England. And actually, there's a little bit of story behind that. You can read my book, find out. That it was really one particular corporation or company that really pressed the issue and wanted all these. I mean, a lot of people were talking about vaccinations. That's another thing. You cannot, if you want to hold up your export trade, if you want your export trade to be intact, you can't have vaccinations, because if you do a test on an animal to find out if it has, for instance, foot and mouth disease, or if it doesn't, and it's been vaccinated against foot and mouth disease, it shows up on the test. So even though the animal never had foot and mouth disease, if you vaccinate against it, you cannot export that animal. So here's the little unknown truth about foot and mouth disease. You know, again, this disease is wildly contagious. So that's why they had these wide buffer zones, you know, 6 million animals. The animal must die. These animals must die, you know, to protect the export business. This is the reasoning. But also, of course, because the productivity it wanes in the animal. And all those animals had to die. And that is a lot of animals, folks. And it's bad for everybody. It's bad for the farmers. Certainly, they lose. But, of course, the government compensated the farmers. The government provides the armies, literally armies of people that go in and shoot the animals and exterminate them and incinerate them, I should say. And this cannot be fun. I mean, I would not want to be one of these civil service employees that is suddenly called upon to pull out my shotgun and kill beautiful animals, you know, who writhe in pain before they die. I remember during that epidemic, in 2001, there was a baby calf or a baby sheep, or cute little baby sheep, lamb that was uncovered. Little lamb was underneath its mother, you know, in a pile. And somebody noticed that a little baby was kind of wiggling around. And so they pulled it out. And they decided not to kill this animal, this baby. And that it was the kind of emblem of hope, let's say, for, you know, after this horror that was going on. People in England were going crazy, you know, hearing all this on the news and seeing this on the news every night. But, you know, of course the animal could have had foot and mouth disease. the whole thing, you know, just makes me pretty sick. It makes me extremely sick. And it makes me happy I'm a vegetarian, I'll tell you that. But my question is, ultimately, why is the government forking over compensation to these farmers? You know, everybody says, well, if the government didn't do that, then these farmers would be less likely to report when a member of their herd becomes infected. You know, suddenly, you know, the farmer is the first one to see an animal, you know, getting the blisters and everything. He says, oh, foot and mouth disease. But, you know, he would be inclined to just, you know, quietly go and slaughter the animal and bury it. And that'd be maybe the end of it, hopefully, you know. But that's against the law. You must report immediately. And if you do, the government will come in and it will exterminate your entire herd. So there has to be some incentive for a farmer to do the right thing, quote-unquote. So that's why the government compensates. But this disease in 2001 in England cost the equivalent of $9 billion to eradicate. And now it's back again. You know, let's talk about some of the other animal disease out there that are rife in the meat industry. Exotic Newcastle disease. This is a very contagious disease that affects chickens. Yes, chickens. There's a Nipah virus. This is a disease that jumps from pigs to humans now. There's a hideous cull in Malaysia some years ago, I think in year 2000 or so, maybe 1999. Animals were shot and forced to jump over a cliff or something. People were running around crazy. They didn't want to touch the animals, and so they would somehow herd them into a pen, and then they'd shoot them in a small pen. The culling methods are so cruel. I can't even talk about them. I mean, I can't even think about it. With bird flu, of course, which is H5N1, a strain of avian influenza, which is this particular strain that is now jumping the species barrier directly from birds to human beings. Most people have heard of this one. You know, they were lighting living animals on fire, you know, because they didn't want to touch the animals, because they're afraid of getting sick. But mad cow disease, how could I forget? You know, there's a lot of diseases out there. And most human diseases came from animals, domesticated animals. You know, when we were living up in the trees before we domesticated animals, we really didn't have that many diseases, you know. But we have, you know, many, many, many infectious diseases. And almost some of the biggies, and Michael Greger talks a lot about this in his book about bird flu and in many of his writings. And I've read this many places that, you know, that it is animals from which we contract almost all the diseases out there. And this is why, in fact, when Europeans came to the Western Hemisphere, that the native Indian populations in North America and South America just kind of broke out in boils and just dropped dead, because human beings had long before, or Europeans long ago had contracted these diseases from animals, and those people who could stand up to them survived and lived on to pass their genes along. And it seemed that everybody, all Europeans, had basic immunity to these diseases. But when they go over to a whole new population across an ocean, all they had to do was just touch a person, practically, or breathe on them or something, and they would get these diseases. So that's why all the native North and South American people were wiped out by disease. You know, it's going on today. We're still getting diseases from animals. This bird flu thing is, you know, this hangs over our head, you know. Who knows how big that's ever going to be. Ultimately, when you're talking about animal disease, and let's talk about foot and mouth disease. Let's say foot and mouth disease came to America, and there is no reason why it won't someday, you know. And we could have our own little party, you know, and bonfire of you know, many, many millions of animals being, you know, exterminated and incinerated. We could have our own version of that outbreak easily. But sometimes what is a byproduct or an offshoot of this, another horror, I mean, if it's not horrible enough for you, another thing that you can expect from the meat industry, they will say that foot and mouth disease, oh, it's come over here, or with mad cow disease in particular. In fact, it's already going on. In the case of chronic wasting disease, this is akin to mad cow disease and Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is the human form of mad cow disease. It infects wild elk, Let's see. And wild elk and another common species, wild large mammal in North America, can't think of it right now. Wild animals, basically. And we don't really know how it got into the wild population. Some people are blaming people who have put together caribou farms of trying to domesticate these wild animals. And whenever you put animals into a pen and you try and domesticate them and you try and breed them and raise them and farm them, the first thing that can happen is that disease takes hold. Disease really doesn't take hold in the wild. When disease happens in the wild, you have basically small flocks, small herds. You have like a few animals that travel together as sort of a small herd, small flock. And if there's a disease that takes hold, it goes its course, and there are just a few animals that might die from it, the closest ones. But it dies out. It doesn't get anywhere. But when you're talking about domesticated animals that are today in huge numbers, easily a disease can, first of all, take hold and can also be very, very deadly and still survive. For instance, any virus, if it's going to survive, it doesn't want to kill off its host, But sometimes some strains might be very, very virulent. And normally a virulent strain would just die out really, really, really quickly because it would kill its host. So all of its hosts, maybe it's dozen or two dozen hosts that are living, of a species living close together in the wild. But in domesticated situations, it will have to go through a lot of animals, and it could kill off many, many animals. In fact, this also goes for human beings. If we get bird flu, if a real H5N1 epidemic takes hold, this is conjecture. We don't know this, right? So, what can I say? That's about it, talking about foot and mouth disease. I suggest people, listen to the BBC. BBC online is very good. You can, that's where I first heard that there was this foot and mouth outbreak, and I said, oh, please, not again. I just don't want to hear about this foot and mouth disease. It's really horrendously horrible. But it's one more reason. If you're trying to convince your meat-eating friends and family, to give up meat, this is a great reason. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. Foot and mouth diseases. I don't know. Meat eaters don't think about it. But make them think about it. Put it in their face a little bit. Tell them that this is a horror. Shouldn't be going on. So that's about it for Hard News Vegan. That's me, Pamela Rice. That is I, Pamela Rice, the Hard News Vegan. And this is podcast number 2. And I was very happy to have you on board listening. And, oh, there's my phone. I'm going to go catch that. Okay. See you next time.